Podcasting is a complicated profession, and that's why we're here to talk to you about The Bad Batch, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and for this series of episodes, I am joined once again by my good friend, pal, defective clone, Tony Sindelar. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. Hello, nerds. Here to talk more about Star Wars, the wars in the stars.
It's amazing that no one has stopped us from this yet. It seems
it's
like...
honestly, I'm disappointed in the world for not caring more. That you'd think somebody would throw a wrench into this.
Yeah, I don't know. But apparently we are allowed to continue talking about Star Wars, and so we shall. And we're picking up with episode 4 of season 1, entitled Cornered. Mm-hmm. I think, Tony, you're going to give us a high-level walkthrough, and then we'll talk about it a bit.
All right. High-level walkthrough. Several locations are mentioned in this episode, and I do the thing where I have to look up on Wikipedia are the locations places we've heard of before in Star Wars or not. We'll circle back on that. So the clones are on their way to a place called Idle Floor. Don't get too hung up on that. We don't get there this episode, but they need to stop over at the nearest planet, Pantora, because they're out of fuel and they're out of food. I don't know which of those is more important, and they need to change their transponder thingy so that they can't be tracked as easily, because they are apparently wanted. What a great combination. No food, no fuel, and you're wanted by the authorities. They land on Pantora. Wrecker learns a little bit about the intricacies of bribery, which is to say you need to give people money, and also they're still going to sell you out to Fennec Shand, mercenary and bounty hunter, because not just are they clones wanted, or their ship is wanted, it seems like specifically there is a bounty out on Omega. So we do the, it seems like, traditional divide and conquer of the clones, where Tech and Wrecker are going to work on fixing the ship, which first means they have to take it all apart, and Omega, Hunter, and Echo are going to set off to do stuff. So they go into town. This is Pantora is a nice city planet, or at least they're in a city, which is nice compared to our previous episodes. They're a little bit more in wilderness, and they're trying to buy supplies. Echo is, I guess, wearing a disguise to hide his face that makes him look like a droid, and Hunter basically stumbles into an opportunity to sell Echo off as a droid for money, which is good.
and also probably unethical, highly unethical.
Yeah, probably. There's further questions about sentience of droids / how they're treated in the Star Wars universe. Always problematic. Hunter also demonstrates his inability to parent as he allows an unsupervised child to basically wander off into a city. Omega is picked up by Fennec Shand, who seems to be interested in, I don't know, I guess just abducting her, but coming about it from a very friendly way.
Yeah, being friends first.
Yeah. Fennec Shand and Hunter cross paths. They fight. Fennec Shand seems to get the better of him, but Omega runs off. There's a lot of chasing in this episode. There's foot chases. There's people hanging from ledges. There's speeder chases as people are chasing throughout the city, with Omega trying to evade Fennec Shand, Hunter trying to get to Omega and then get away from Fennec Shand. Basically all the clones end up back together on their shuttle. The transponder has been fixed. Echo has brought a bunch of robots to help put the ship back together, and they all fly away. Shand radios in that she was unable to locate the target, suggesting that we're gonna see Fennec Shand again. So that's my very quick run through of it. I didn't give you the Guy English blow-by-blow of each fight scene, but hopefully that gives you the sense of it.
Yeah, a couple things that stood out to me in this episode. You mentioned that this is like more inhabited, which is nice. I think that this is, it adds a little more flavor.
Yes.
And there are a couple moments that are really nice in that regard, right? There's the parade of clone troopers. Mm-hmm. And everybody celebrating the war is over, and the clones pointing out, like, well, it's not so great maybe if you're the side who lost. We see another one of those holograms of Rampart talking about the chain code.
Telling you to turn in your money.
Turn in your money. And there's just, I think there's also a lot of opportunities in this episode for great lighting effects. The one shot that stood out to me, and it's a relatively simple shot, but it looked really good, is there's a scene where Hunter spots the clone doll that Echo or that Omega has been playing with, and it's lying on the ground. And there's just a really nice use of the way that the sort of the focus is composited and all of that. Like, it has this really nice effect, and it makes it feel very atmospheric. And I think a lot of the sort of lighting in this episode especially plays extremely nicely.
Yeah. You know, I felt like this episode combined some of the stuff I particularly like about Clone Wars episodes and Rebels episodes. I think there's a lot of Rebels energy into this. Dave Filoni seems to love speeder bikes, which I'm like, eh, okay. But, you know, so speeder bikes are fun. Chases are fun. Early seasons of Rebels have a lot of stuff set in an urban environment, which I like. I like Star Wars in the urban environment.
I agree.
That, to me, is the character of Star Wars with, you know, weird architecture and city streets packed with, you know, dozens of different creatures of all kinds of shapes and sizes. And so this felt a little bit more Star Wars-y than or at least the things of Star Wars I like compared to our previous three episodes. And yeah, it felt like it had some of the kind of action stylings of Rebels, but then some of the kind of visual stylings of those last seasons of Star Wars Clone Wars. Rebels tends to be kind of more flat, colorful lighting. This is a lot spookier, a lot more shadows and grit. So I enjoyed that parts a bit.
The dynamics between the Bad Batch is fun. I think the thing that I was thinking about this, and Rebels came to mind for me this week as well, just because it does evoke some of those early seasons of Rebels in tone and sort of in terms of what happens in the plot. And I thought one of the interesting things that's sort of a challenge for the Bad Batch is, we have in Rebels, you could always have these episodes where you sort of delved a little bit more into the stories of the characters and their backstories, where they came from, etc. And that's a challenge in the Bad Batch, because we kind of know everything that's happened to these characters, right? Like, there are details and like operations and stuff like that that they might have done in the past, but fundamentally all these characters also have the same background, right? It's not like, oh, we came from different places and we came together and then we formed a crew. And it's like, no, we were all like, we have basically known each other since birth.
Yes, and we were grown for this job and then have survived some tragedy together, and we're here. Yeah,
right. And but where I do think that leads to potentially some interesting storytelling routes, and I don't think they've done too much with this yet, but is the evolution of these characters in a world outside of the clone army, because we have we have barely ever seen that except in the examples of Rex, a little bit in Rebels, and Cut, who we saw a couple weeks ago as the deserter, right? Like, we have not really seen what happens to clones when they leave that support system, because that is not really a thing that they've had the freedom to do. And that's the other interesting question, is depending on how the sort of the clones shake out, and we obviously last week talked about the sort of project of the conscripting soldiers, etc., we don't know if they'll be allowed to, right? Like, it's not like, oh, well, we don't need an army anymore. The clones can, you know, be demobilized and sent home or sent off to live lives. And it's like, how does that work if you are, like, the property, quote unquote, of, like, Kamino or what have you, right? Like, you can't feed and like, you know, support all these people if you don't have money coming in. So I think that's sort of also an interesting dilemma, and like part of why we saw last week the Kaminoans having to talk about, like, we need the money to sort of keep, you know, fun. We need to make ourselves a competitive bid sort of in continuing to run the Empire's army so that we can get paid for this and support the thousands and thousands of mouths that we have to feed, etc. So I think it will be interesting to see how each of these individual characters adapts to, like, a freedom. Do they want to, do they continue being a unit? Are they, like, you know, how do they change? Do they change? I don't know. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of joked that Wrecker doesn't get how bribes work. But it is a little bit, I mean, it's a silly moment, but it's also kind of a, you know, these clones don't operate in, for lack of a better word, society much, right? Like, they don't,
exactly.
You know, there's the line about, like, we have to get supplies for the first time instead of just being handed it by the Republic. This is new to them, and it is, it's a little bit of a weird, because they seem highly capable because they're such kind of, like, deadly, trained, proficient warriors, but they are not I guess, expert in navigating the world, and even, you know, the tech expert needs to land the ship to change the transponder, and it seems like is very confident, can do the thing, but has to take like the entire ship apart to get to the thing, which suggests maybe not as maybe not as capable of as he thinks he is, or as his confidence,
or as like you don't have like a whole crew, maintenance crew there working with you.
Yes, yeah, right.
I think the bribery thing is great. I it's a great point. I thought about that too. And like, even tech doesn't know how much to give him. Right? They give him some money, and then they're like, oh, more money. And you know, that's got to be a scarce resource for them as well, right? They're talking about they don't have a lot of money, and so it also raises the question of who are these characters going to be outside of this framework, right?
Yeah.
Because are they going to sell Echo every week to make another few thousand credits? That seems problematic.
These are not smooth talking smugglers. The closest they have is Hunter. Hunter is kind of their face that they seem to send out when things need to happen. And even, you know, he's a little out of his element. He's good at tracking things. But not a shrewd negotiator, but the best they have.
Well, and it's an interesting issue too, right? Because it's a short term fix, right? They're like, well, we're gonna sell Echo, get some money, and like buy enough supplies, you know, to get to our next destination. But the question is, again, who do you want to be when you get there, and how are you going to make your living? Are you deciding like we want to essentially run petty crimes and like make money off that, or like are we going to get jobs? Like, you know, I think that's sort of where the tension of this is going
to
go.
And, you know, there's even in the first kind of moments, it's like, we're going to this place called Idlefor, and we're going to hide out there, and that, like, that's where we're going, and that's where we're staying. And Omega's like, I've never been anywhere else. I don't know if I want to stay somewhere. And they're like, that's what we're doing.
Sorry, kid.
Idlefor, not previously mentioned in the Star Wars world. This was, as far as Wikipedia could tell me, first mention of it. The planet where most of our action this week takes place, Pantora is previously mentioned, and we see Pantora a couple times, but in Clone Wars and whatnot, but mainly we see people from Pantora even more than that. There's a reoccurring senator from Pantora who's appears in a handful of Clone Wars episodes. They're the people. We don't see a ton of them in this episode, but the resident Pantorans, blue skin. You know, I don't know if any of them had any dialogue in this episode, but the two cops that got killed by Fennec Shand,
The cops and the woman that she steals the fruit from when they're in the street. A lot of crime.
A lot of property damage.
A lot of crime and property damage, yeah.
Yeah. Indiscriminate property damage.
Yeah, Fennec's an interesting character. So obviously Fennec Shand we met in The Mandalorian, played there by Ming-Na Wen, who reprises that role here in voice acting. We don't know a lot about her, but like we see that she is both someone who is willing, as you pointed out, to be sort of like duplicitous, right? She pretends to sort of be friendly and helping Omega, thinking, I guess, you know, most people are abducted by people that they know. So I'll get to know them and then abduct them.
Or maybe that's just calculating, I'm not going to cause a scene here in the street.
Probably more like that. And she, not only does she kill a couple of the security officers, as you said, but she falls into a guy's car, knocks him out, and throws him out of the car, which is going at a high speed in the air.
Yep.
That guy is not okay, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, she later builds off that for shooting a cop, causing that cop to, on his speeder bike, to crash into something else and explode. The ship that she's on, I don't know if that's her fault or not, explodes later. There's, a lot of people seemingly hurt at the hands of Fennec Shand. I'll just mention for people who are confused, they never name the character in the episode.
Yes.
Even I watch with captions, and the captions identify her as woman, but in the credits she is listed as Fennec Shand, and this is, as Dan mentioned, character we see in live action form in The Mandalorian, who I assume is a human. Aging is a little strange in terms of, she's wearing a helmet most of the time here. I don't know how old she is here versus how old she would then need to be in The Mandalorian, since that is
it's about 28 years later or so. Yeah.
So 30 years later. Yeah. I guess I don't know how old she is then either. But you know, elite assassin in Mandalorian, does a lot of sniping, also seems pretty skilled at martial arts. I mean, in this episode we see her take down Wrecker very quickly, Hunter pretty quickly. So extremely competent and seems like probably someone who will return and they'll have to deal with in at least one more episode, I would expect.
Just to say, Ming-Na Wen is 57. And if you took that 28 years earlier, she'd only be 29. Ming-Na Wen is 57.
I do not. That does not make any sense. Damn, she like climbed up walls with her feet. I don't. I
can't do that now.
I couldn't do that when I was
in my 20s.
No, I could not. I could do that never. And you know, I mean, I know I represent the younger half of this our audience here because you are an aged Gen Xer and I'm a hip young millennial.
That's true.
But neither of us can or is capable of anywhere near the level of martial arts that Ming-Na Wen. As a 50, that does not make any sense. So,
it's true.
Yeah.
Wild.
Good for her.
The big question, or thought to be the big question, obviously, is who is she working for?
Yes.
There's a fairly small pool of options.
Yeah. My guess is Kamen Owens.
Yep, that
I was surprised we did not. I thought we were going to see them.
Yep.
It seemed a little, I guess, maybe pointlessly cryptic for why are they not seen. But no, that's always my question of how often are we going to see the Kamen Owens and or Crosshair? And the answer seems to be right now, every other episode.
Right, right.
So no Kamen Owens, no Crosshair in this episode.
Yeah, the only other real possibility I felt like was somebody on the Imperial side who was trying to like scoop her up. So the Kaminoans didn't have access to her, but it seems like the Kaminoans are definitely the most likely candidates because we saw last week that they're like, we need a clone back, and they're not going to come back willingly. So it's like, yeah, we can connect the dots on that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does give our crew two ongoing threats to deal with in both the form of Fennec Shand and eventually Crosshair, one would assume, as well as. You know, sort of just the everyday like Imperial and clone army being on the lookout for them as well, and then being wanted, etc. All of that. So I like that. I mean, I again sort of to going to your like things I like about Star Wars the best. I think I would agree there's an element of the underdog. I think that always plays well.
Yeah.
That we like that like especially made the original trilogy resonate so much, which is like our protagonists are up against insurmountable odds. And they have to find a way to deal with that, right? So it's like everybody's gunning for them, or you know, you're a scrappy little rebel force going against the big evil empire. So you're the underdog. I think that works in the favor of these shows a lot.
So yeah, I think this is probably the episode that I of the three post the first episode, which I guess I'm grouping as its own because it was 75 minutes. I think I'm the most positive about this one compared to Cut and Run and Replacements. It had the elements of Star Wars I like. You know, it's replete with kind of action, silly things. You know, it's Dave Filoni loves to litter his Star Wars world with references to previous Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I even noted all of the when they're using the camera network to try and track Omega, or as Omega says, Omega, all the camera network in Pantora looks like it's the weird six.
Yes.
Box things, the detention level and the Death Star.
Yep.
Which like, okay, I guess that's a camera. You know, yeah, because there's only one camera maker in all of the galaxy, or that's what a surveillance system looks like. Do we want to talk at all
about I just want to mention a couple of the references I liked. One, there are loth cats in the street at one point that Omega looks at. Not the ones that later we see them barking. Those look familiar, but I could not place them. But like when they're first walking through the streets of Pantora and looking at all the stands, there are a couple of loth cats like behind a fruit vendor or something.
Did we know? Have we seen loth cats outside of Lothal before? I forget. Are they a vermin that?
Yes,
is
they show up
because
they show up in the Mandalorian episode 2, the live action.
Oh,
they show up briefly on that planet with what's her name? I can't remember her name, but where Ahsoka shows up at one point.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that was
the weird, I don't know what they are, the space dog things.
Yes.
That Omega is distracted by, that the one of the pilots in Resistance has a pet one of those.
Oh,
the thing that looks like a dog with really weird skinny stick legs.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah.
There were a couple bits I enjoyed in here that were from the lines. I enjoyed the charade of selling Echo as a droid.
Yes.
And just having him walk out later, and that he is upset that he is not being sold for more than 2,000 credits. That was pretty good. And then he fakes being a droid, like when Hunter's like, go with your new owner now. He's like, whatever you require. That was funny. And then he gets out. He has the whole interaction with like the droid overseer. And points out that he can remove all the restraining bolts, and then the owner's like really upset, like, you're not a droid, and he's like, whatever, you got me for a bargain. That was good. And then I liked Fennec.
Yeah, you should be real sure if you're buying a droid.
Make sure it's a droid.
I mean, make sure it's a droid, like, or at least know what model droid it is.
Because, you know, checking a horse's teeth, right? You want to check a droid's helmet thing.
Yeah, like, open the hood of the car that you're buying when you're buying a very used car.
Right, I mean, if there's a guy...
make sure there's an engine in there.
Yeah, not a guy, just pushing the car.
Yeah, if there's a guy in there making car noises, don't buy the car.
Don't buy that. That's not going to get...
That's Tony's consumer advice.
I mean, unless it's like a Flintstone car. I mean, I guess that's kind of all there is in a Flintstone car.
I think that guy is not going to be there tomorrow, is what I'm saying.
I was just going to say, I enjoyed the Fennec dropping Omega... and telling her to tuck and roll. just drop a kid into a truck. That's fine.
Yep. A truck driven by, I forget what the name of the species is, Ponda Baba's species, listening to bopping out to music with headphones on while driving their, maybe trash truck? I don't know, some kind of big loader truck. The guy who ran the landing bay guy. Is Celestin, who speaks common and not, because we've seen that was Nyanyub, who only spoke whatever his language was, that I guess Lando was
Celestin,
back in
the tournament.
Yes, Celestin. I enjoyed that. I always enjoy droid hijinks. I think droid hijinks are very divisive among Star Wars viewers because they don't really hold up to any scrutiny or logic. Even restraining bolts, I mean... Mm-hmm. In this situation, Echo is obviously not a droid, so a restraining bolt on his armor does nothing. But what does a restraining bolt do?
It restrains.
It seems like droids have a certain amount of free will that it then inhibits, but Echo is effectively just able to talk the protocol droid into coming along, which, like, you know, whatever. And he brought his two R2 units, and then I don't know what that third one is.
It's with little
like
arms?
R2 unit with legs.
That was great.
With legs
like
and little arms. Yeah, he kind of had a Forbidden Planet robot kind of look to him.
Yep.
And also, like, none of those robots have anything to do with fixing ships, but whatever, you know.
Well, they're two of them are astromechs. That's fine.
Okay, all right. Many hands make light work, so you bring them along.
Love the design of the guy with the legs.
Droid, yeah.
Because I think it looked like... If you were filming a 1970s show with a robot and you put like, wasn't it on Battlestar Galactica? Was it, oh God, didn't they have like, was it Muffet or was that his name? Or Muppet or something?
I don't remember.
It does
look like a robot.
Isn't it like a
made
monkey in a suit
basically.
Or something?
And the protocol droid was your excellent typical protocol droid of a whiny nuisance, but also do not have a particularly confident personality and can easily be brought along.
Yes. I guess if you're a person, do you automatically trump a restraining bolt? Is that how it works? It's like, this is just to prevent you from taking like orders from other droids? I don't even know.
It's real glossed over. And restraining bolts, I mean, they came up in A New Hope. They come up, I think, a couple times in Clone Wars. I think there's a whole thing about R2 like doesn't have a restraining bolt, and at one point gets captured, and they put a restraining bolt, and R2 is like able to remove the restraining bolt, which it seems like the restraining bolt doesn't prevent you from removing the restraining bolt. That's some pretty basic failure of restraining bolt functionality. I think some people get hung up on the logic of that, and I don't mind. Oh, you know what they even threw in here, which made me even feel more rebel feels? They run through a sewers at one point,
And
Dave Filoni, he loves sewers. Sewers and speeder bikes, those are his, those are like a drug to him.
The sewer is also the scene where Wrecker goes to fight Fennec Shand and is dispatched in about two seconds, which I thought was unfortunate.
Oh, this'll be a big fight. Nope.
Yeah, she slams his head into a wall, and that's that. Once again, reminding us that, those helmets don't really do much. And
no.
B, this is the second time in two episodes that Wrecker has received some sort of head injury, which is, I feel like, is worrying.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't hear anything about his headache this episode. No mention of control chips whatsoever this episode. But yeah, Wrecker, I think Wrecker by himself may be limited functionality.
Yeah.
He's an integral part of a team, but as a solo act, does not make good choices.
It's funny because we see there is this like dilemma with like the team when it's all together seems to kind of fire on all cylinders, but they by necessity have had to split their forces because there's just them, right? And so they have to like send people off, you do this, and that in some ways inhibits their like optimal operation capacity or whatever. So we haven't really seen them sort of have to face a threat all together at the same time in the same way that they did before, which is again an interesting way to sort of deal with the fact that you have this elite fighting force and it turns out they're really good at this thing, but unfortunately that thing does not occur all the same ways that it used to.
Yep. Nope.
Yeah, it's like when you ever brought like this like tech team to like brunch or something, like, all right, you get the reservations. Yeah. No, we're not equipped for this.
I don't know how to park.
I never learned how to pay to park. All right, anything else? So, yeah. Anything else we should mention from episode?
I'll say again, my spirits are a little bit higher after this episode compared to the previous one or two. This is more of the Star Wars I'm looking for.
And I think it helps to have other characters for them to play off, which we didn't get as much last week when you're dealing with just like random creature on a moon.
Yeah, even, you know what? Space Radio Shack guy is way more interesting than space flashlight eating monster on a moon.
The official ratings of this series. We will be ranking them going on out. All right. Well, that is it for this week's episode. We will be back next week to discuss episode 5 of The Bad Batch. As always, I would like to thank my podcasting pal, Tony Sindelar, for being here.
Goodbye, nerds.
And thank you all out there for supporting A Complicated Profession and listening. As a reminder, you can support our show directly by being an Incomparable member by going to theincomparable.com/members, signing up for a membership plan, and sending a little bit of money towards A Complicated Profession. And you get a whole bunch of bonus content for doing that, including bootleg episodes and some additional episodes, bonus episodes dropped here and there, and possibly even some swag. So it's a good time and well worth your money. And we shall be back next week. But until then, may the Force be with you.